Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
Yeah, everything I ate was fantastic. I'm a big foodie. Everything I ate was fantastic. Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. As always, I'm your quickly doing the intro so we don't forget and have to cut around it. Again, host Matthew Olenchek, joined as always by my lovely work husband Harrison Poole. How are you?
I'm here. I got a funeral tomorrow, so like I'm not hella happy, but like I'm
I
here.
Feel that. I had a really good bit I wanted to open with, but then Charlie Kirk had to die, and now I have to send flowers to Gun Girl along with a card of consolation.
Yeah.
I will talk briefly about that, because I do want to get to this bit.
Okay.
I thought of a question for you on this 12-hour car ride I took. Hell yeah. Huge fan of it.
Yeah.
I saw someone, because I'm not like, want to look at footage of people dying all the time. It's not like something I'm like into. But then someone on a forum I'm on said, don't watch it. It's super gruesome. So now I'm into it.
Sure.
It's not.
Okay.
It looks like a Spirit Halloween decoration. Or like the, whenever the bride kills a Japanese person in Kill Bill, and it's like, it just went, and he like fell over.
Yeah, but it's real is the thing. It's not like, it's not as gruesome as like Kill Bill, but Kill Bill is a fictional.
He just kind of goes like,
yes.
Sploosh was the noise I was texting people whenever they said like, did you hear the news? And I'd reply, sploosh.
So, okay. So
I'm amazed you made it to the hospital.
Oh, me too.
Whoever was like the first responder there, amazing
100%.
Job.
100%. Oh my God. I have more thoughts on it. Real quick, I want to tell you. Okay, so I'm going to a funeral tomorrow. Yeah. For a comedy.
Charlie Kirk.
Yeah, no, but a comedy friend. He had a car accident like 3 weeks ago. He was in like IC, like intensive trauma. They amputated both of his legs. He was stabilizing, and then they transferred him from Michigan to Akron, or not Akron General, but like the big Akron hospital. And then I don't know if it was mid transfer. Or basically as soon as he got to Akron, he was no longer
just lost the will to live.
And because he'd gone through like so many surgeries, his body couldn't take it anymore.
Why'd they take his legs?
Because they were swelling to the point where they were going to explode and it was going to kill him.
I don't know what happens to car accidents, I guess. I thought you just lose legs for diabetes.
No, you lose legs for several reasons. But so because this was such a long, dramatic affair, I went to three different memorial shows for him, one of which when he was still alive.
Yeah, that's wild.
So the first one.
Hey, just put it on the record, if I'm ever like in ICU, don't call it a memorial thing until I'm dead.
Yeah, 100%. So, okay, so I'm not going to name names because I'm angry. There's a comedian who was giving us updates. He was like in direct contact with the family, and he was updating everyone via Facebook. And then last Monday or Tuesday was basically when he said, Andrew's body is shutting down. He can't handle any more surgeries. And then not 2 hours later posted this like basically a eulogy, which is like, thank you for being there for me in the darkest time. He wrote, I will love you forever, Dr. Yogurt. It's a eulogy, like, so everyone thought he was dead.
Yeah.
And then,
because that's when eulogies are posted.
Yes. Less than 24 hours later, he posted, I think some of you guys misinterpreted what my message was. He's in critical condition, he's not dead.
Can you imagine if he posted that he had a memorial show and then he was just fine?
Imagine him waking up. And not only do you wake up from this traumatic car accident, the last thing you remember, by the way, is a car hitting
you. Yeah,
you
have no legs.
You wake up, you have no legs, and all of your friends have memorialized you. And you want to say that we misinterpreted? No, you mix-messaged.
That's insane.
No, so it's, and then the second memorial show I did, he was dead.
The second memorial show's insane. Three memorial shows.
Yes.
In like a year?
In a week.
In a week. Yeah, you have like a second memorial show like an anniversary of their death.
So it was the day after he actually. So okay, so he posted on like
he's
Monday.
Not even in the ground.
He post no. His funeral's tomorrow.
His body's probably not all the way cold yet.
I'm going to his funeral tomorrow. So the second, so he passed away last Thursday, or we found out last Thursday, so we're guessing. So that Friday, I had a show in Canton at his regular club, and so they were doing like a mini tribute in the beginning, and then we were doing a regular show. It was great. Truly, it was really beautiful. It was a nice way for everyone to collectively mourn. Some of us were in the green room being very angry at this other comedian. Also, so the comedian who's been posting all the updates.
Yeah.
So he posted that he was dead on Thursday, and then Friday morning is the open mic at a different club that everyone hates. I will go more into crackpots just in the future, but this is just like Northeast Ohio drama right now. But so what you need to know is nobody likes the owner of crackpots. He's a piece of shit. It's a decades long whatever. The person updating posted everyone needs to come to the crackpots open mic. Forget your bias towards the club. We all need to be there together. Basically guilt tripping everyone, using our dead friend to guilt trip everyone to show up to their open mic. And in the same post marketed that they had like a wing deal or like a drink deal. If I didn't have another mic that night, I maybe would have gone.
This
to
guy's
just
gonna get a next Netflix special
at him. Oh my gosh.
This man's playing the game.
He used our dead friend to promote the shitty club. So anyway, the last memorial show was Tuesday. Where it was the same mic as the first memorial show when he wasn't dead, but he was dead, but he wasn't dead. Now he's actually dead. And so I show up to the mic, and they have a projector projecting onto the back wall a memorial slideshow of photos of our dead friend.
While you're doing the jokes?
While we're doing jokes. So everyone did like a mini tribute up front. So they expected us to do a mini
tribute
up front.
That'd be incredible if it was an Andy Kaufman bit.
And, right. And then try to transition into like a set. Maybe, or if you can do an entire set just doing the tribute and like jokes about him, whatever. So needless to say, no one did fantastic. It was set up to fail. So not only do you know you're bombing at this tribute show, you have photos of your dead friend behind you reminding you the reason why you're sad. So now I'm officially going to his funeral tomorrow. His viewing hours right now are right now.
Mm.
But I'm so dedicated to this.
Yeah, you could have called off. It would have been 100% cool.
No, they have another viewing. They have like another calling hours the hour before Mass, and then I'm attending the Mass. Mm. If I wasn't doing Friday, I would absolutely be calling off today. But beside the point. So this week has been weird. While you've been enjoying MCR in Boston,
I had a great time.
I've been attending tribute shows to my dead friend.
But yeah, Boston was great.
Hell yeah. How was, what all did you do? Did you get into a big trouble situation?
No. I managed to, we mostly took the train, the T.
Hell yeah.
So that got me where I needed to go. We got there at 10 in the morning. And then because we left Ohio at 9 p.m. So then we slept. Then we just kind of like ate some seafood. I convinced my mom that it was a crab march. Like once a week, the crabs march out of the ocean and they have to shut down traffic in Boston. And there's a crab marshal that leads them. It's usually an older man, part of like the Lions Club.
Sure.
And it's a big event for people in town, visiting people. It's like a big thing.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure she believed me, but once I got back home, she's like, "You never sent me any pictures of the crab march. How was it?" So, but no, you know, we did the Freedom Trail. We looked at all the old buildings and stuff. A lot of cool. It's cool to stand where people used to stand. Like, I'm like, this is where the Boston Massacre happened, underneath my feet.
Yeah.
We saw like Benjamin Franklin's dad's grave.
Ooh.
And like Thomas Paine's grave, Paul Revere's grave. We went on the Constitution, looked at like boat things, and then Salem was a lot of fun. There's some ancient fucking graves there. they're like early 1600s mm-hmm. graves, and they have like the old thing, and you look and you're like, holy fuck, this is old. Because we don't really get that in America, because we're so new.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you can go to Europe and you're like, oh yes, a knight used to live in this home before it became apartments, you know. It's like everything's like brand new, and I'm like, holy fuck, this is old. There's a little witch museum tour where you get to touch a beam. They actually let you touch a beam. It wasn't like the courthouse where they condemned all the witches.
Mm-hmm.
She told us not to lick it because someone licked. She thought she didn't have to say that, but she caught someone licking it once. And she's like, I'm not sure it's like a hard rule. Just don't lick it. Like, it's not like, oh, you're going to destroy it. Just don't do that. It's fucking weird. And then we did this ghost tour with a man who just said allegedly a lot. He's like, allegedly there's a ghost here. I'm like, this man. And then he was like, yeah, I used to test toys at the Parker Milton
yeah.
thing over here. He's like, it was like big with Tom Hanks. You ever see that? I'm going to show you. I think I got a picture of a ghost.
I can see. I can see where you can see it.
Yeah, that's a haunted window.
I can admit that far.
And I'll say, because I took a bunch of them, I should have saved them for the comparisons. Some of that smudge, but a lot of that isn't in the other photos.
Okay.
But that was fun. And then, you know, I got to see My Chemical Romance.
How was that? I'm so
transformative.
Jealous.
Yeah. I imagine it's like seeing the Sermon on the Mound. It was incredible. I almost lost my shit because there's these kids behind me who big fans, which is why I didn't lose my shit. But they're like, oh, he's older than my dad. And then like they were waiting for the concert. He's like, what are you doing? Grabbing his dentures? I'm like, fuck me, dude. On the ride back, a woman called me Unk.
Nice.
As we were talking, and I mentioned something back in my day. She's like, how old are you? And I'm like, I'm 30. She's like, oh, damn, you Unk.
How old was this person you were talking to?
I don't know.
Okay.
Younger, early college, maybe late high school. I don't know. We were just waiting for the train. And we were,
no,
and
sure. I wasn't
all the MCR people. And then we all got on the train. It's like two people who aren't from the concerts, and they're like, not having a great time. We saw like a local celebrity. It's a super autistic girl who likes the trains and dresses up as them. But yeah, it is. I mean, it's incredible because the whole, you know, Gerard loves his story. So it's the whole production.
Mm-hmm.
It's the whole like story that's happening. There's like the language. There's like a live execution everyone votes on. It ends with a guy doing like a suicide vest.
Mm-hmm.
It's when they do blood because he dies. And the clerk or the stage manager for the totalitarian regime of Drog comes up, and now he's dressed as like an old fashioned clown. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if those freak you out, like the white hats and stuff. And then he picks up a very limp Gerard Way and mimes him singing blood. And then he sings the last half of it. Then he reveals a suicide vest. I'm like, what the fuck are they gonna do with this? Because I mean, at this point, they'd like lit the stage on fire. Like mm-hmm. they had the fires going. The big screen in the back has fire. There's actual fires on the stage. There's fire shooting out of the stage. It's nuts. I'm like, it looks like it's burning down. But like the vest had pyrotechnics in it. Like I would describe them as like explosive squibs.
Yeah.
So they go psh, 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 and the whole stage blew up and he was gone.
Oh, hell yeah.
And then there's an intermission where a woman plays a cello.
Okay.
Because it's two concerts.
Yeah.
And then the band comes back out to just do like other songs, not part of the Black Parade. And it really is, it's just so funny. It's always fun to see like performers out of character. Especially right after they do a character.
Mm-hmm.
See, like Gerard was doing this very like bombastic, angry, vaguely Eastern European man with a weird voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
He comes out, he's like, hey, everybody. Hey, great job. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like kind of hunched in on himself.
Yeah.
He's a bit nervous. At one point, he's telling the band to keep playing so he could drink some water. At one point, he gets up. He's like, oh, look at that moon. Look at that. That's a fucking spooky moon. Oh, is it bigger over here? Is it bigger on the East Coast? And then the camera guys are doing great work, put the moon up on the screen. Say, like, oh, there it is. That's what it looks like. So yeah, it's great. Great spooky moon because we're doing two vampire songs. And then they did, they played like two more songs from Bullets.
Nice.
Well, before the concert, we had a band called, I want to wrap them. Give me a second. They were pretty cool. They are the most. I got to text them, Vic, while we're sitting in the just watching them, saying these are the most British men available, like imaginable.
Yeah.
They were so goddamn fucking British. It was called Idols. They were like,
yeah,
you know,
I love Idols.
It was Idols.
I love Idols.
Have you, so you know what they look like?
Yes.
Most British people imaginable.
Yes.
There's one guy was playing. The guitarist was just in a robe. And it's underwear. I think it was a robe. I was trying to figure out the robe's from. I think it's from a local hotel.
Okay.
The main singer gobbing everywhere.
Yes.
I mean, people loved him. People were fucking moshing. They got the entire... I think, like, the city of Boston must be losing their mind because, like, they have to hear every fucking word because everyone's singing along to every song. They have us shouting, "Teenagers scared the living shit out of me." Like, all the lines are being delivered to Max. Like Gerard isn't singing. The band has stopped playing. My ears are still, like, hurting from everyone shouting that line. But, like, but the Idols was doing, like, a free Palestine chant. Yeah. And, like, I thought the stadium was shaking a bit. I'm like, this is fucking insane. No, they killed it.
Awesome. Dude, they always...
And then they go away, and then we have a big presentation about Drog. And then there's a drum, and a marching band comes out, and they place the ceremonial wheat in front of the drum, and they salute it, and then they leave.
Okay.
And then the opera singer woman, who will come back later for Mama, leads us all in the national anthem of Drog, which is mostly about how much we love wheat and how great it is to survive in a shitty, dreary environment. Like, this line where it's like, oh, beautiful Drog, where the skies are never blue.
Yes.
And then you have a whole between songs. There's like a whole unfolding story. A nuke launches at a certain point. And there's the dictator. We all rise for the grand immortal dictator. And there's one of the screens and the stadium's dedicated to just his view, and at the end he claps, so I guess it went well.
Nice. Okay.
But now it was magical, it was transformative, and I feel like I'm a better person than anyone who hasn't seen that show. Like, it has somehow elevated me in my like walking out of Plato's cave. It is I feel a great sorrow in my heart for anyone who hasn't seen this show. I pity them. Pity you. Yeah. I can't get over how small Boston is. I might have head damage because it's an old house I was staying in. So every time I'd wake up, I go punk, and I go oh, and then I'd walk down the stairs, I go punk, I'm like, oh god, and then I go to museums, like, oh god.
Which is in the three most famous comedians from Boston I know are Bill Burr, Pete Holmes, and Bo Burnham.
Didn't find Bill Burr,
and all of them are like 6'1",
it's why they became comedians. 6'4", 6'6". To get out, to find a place where there's tall doors. I get it.
Is that why he was so angry?
I understand why Bill Burr is as angry as he is. Because I can just picture him in Boston waking up and going, fuck! No, I looked for him everywhere. I was asking people where Bill Burr was, but I couldn't.
Probably in L.A.
Yeah, where things are normally sized.
Wait, where I think he lives?
Oh, and we went to a revolution. Like, there's a whole, like, display about the Tea Party and, like, political action in America part of this museum. It was the old State Hall, I believe. And there's like 20 people who put pennies in. Do you think the Tea Party wasn't justified? Which is wild. But there was, in fact, a newspaper there, a modern newspaper, because January 6th is in museums now.
Yeah, of course it is.
And they had a wall you could write stuff on. Someone wrote a Bible quote. I wrote that Sherman didn't march far enough.
So, fun fact, Sherman is from my hometown. His house, like, hell his yeah. house is in my hometown.
Hell yeah.
He's like one of two famous people that they rep. One is Thomas Ewing, just a senator. Also, the guy who, quote unquote, invented the newspaper comic is from my hometown.
Yeah.
But no.
That's cool, Sherman.
Yeah, no, Sherman is straight up from my hometown.
If I can bring
hometown.
Back two people from American history right now to deal with this crisis we're in, it's Sherman and John Brown. Nothing's gonna be left of like, they're gonna fucking wipe the slate clean. Like, because some Sherman stuff down there too, just talking about stuff. And just the idea that you're like, oh boy howdy, I'm a slave owner in Virginia. I hope those union people don't come and get me and take away my rightful property. And you look over the hill and you're like, is that Sherman? And then he has like billions of billions, but like what would probably appear to you as slave owner to be billions of slaves, because he just free the slaves and be like, hey, I guess you can follow us. They're not doing anything. They're just following. So there's the army marching. Thousands of freed slaves marching. To the point that, like, Washington's like, you have to do something with them. We can't logistically support this. We can't feed all of you and them. You have to do something with them, Sherman. And he's like, no, I'm farming aura. I'm showing up to Confederate cities backed by just thousands of freed slaves. And I'm going to kill everyone there and burn it to the ground. Can you imagine? You're like, fuck, we're being charged by Sherman's like murderous cavalry. Like, no one's gonna survive this. We're fucking dead. This is the revenge of John Brown. And you look up on the hill and there's just thousands of black people watching. He fucking rocked, dude. We used to be a fucking country.
We did.
I said that so much. I'm just looking at stuff like, damn, dude, we used to be a fucking country.
That is how you're supposed to react to Boston, to be absolutely honest.
I get it, man. It's the only time I ever feel patriotic. I'm like, fuck, dude. We used to see someone who's like, you have to pay slightly more on tea for the benefit of big business. And we're like, we're going to kill all of you. Fucking like the boss, I learned the Boston Tea Party wasn't even the expensive tea. It was the tea that they were discounting to do it. But they're like, we hate tyrants. We hate the tyranny of the British crown at this point so fucking much. We're going to go hawk goddamn wild. I got to sit in the church where they had their meeting for it. Mm-hmm. It's like the first church, but it's technically like the third church. And like they still have the pews there. So you can like sit there and you're like, holy. Like there's that great moments of things where you're like in a historical place and you're like, holy, you feel it. You're like, holy fuck. And like they went there, they literally burst out, ran to the harbor, did that, went to the governor's mansion, fucking thrashed it.
We used to be a country.
We used to be a country. Now the president's posting like it's fucking what was it? It's Cliveopolis. It's Cliveopolis now.
What?
It's the White House Twitter posted the Apocalypse Now picture.
Oh, yeah.
And the one Democrat's response is like, how dare you wear that air cavalry uniform? That's stealing honor. Back in the day, if some fucking president declared war on a city with a post that made him look like a general in the military he did not serve in, they would cane him to death.
Are we gonna, I know we mentioned it a little bit in the beginning, are we gonna talk about it?
I'm gonna be honest. I don't know, I have some people in my life worried. I don't think really.
Worried how?
One person called it like the Reichstag fire.
Oh, okay.
It's not, because we're the shittiest form of fascism. We're like, you don't even get like big historical moments. It's just kind of all a shitty quagmire. And it's not gonna be this, because I mean, who's the enemy? Who are they gonna? The Reichstag fire works, so you can say it's the communists.
Yeah.
And everyone dislikes the communists. Most of the country does.
Would woke not be the enemy? Like, would it not be this idea and then anyone who falls into that idea? I'm on your side.
That's the thing. It's too ambiguous. Because a communist, there's people who are communists and are like, I'm communist and I'm like part of a political party. Mm-hmm. Like, woke is, they don't even know what woke is.
But does that not make the idea more dangerous that there is no defined definition, that it literally anyone?
It makes it more dangerous in the hands of the people, but not the government.
Okay.
It's really hard to put a face to woke.
Yes.
But also, like, and then you can't say the Democrats, because unlike back then, like, the half of the government wasn't communist, which is why you could very easily pass a bill restricting civil liberties to fight communism. I don't have much faith in our government, but if Steve Miller stops eating mayonnaise long enough to be like, we should ban Democrats, that's not going to go through.
Sure.
Because they don't have a majority enough to get it through. And there's enough people on the other side who will vote no, because they just need like one or two.
I'm genuinely a little surprised that this wasn't a Luigi Mangione situation.
And it's like, is it universities? We don't have enough military to occupy every university.
No, but that, like, no one, there wasn't like a unified, like, good thing is not what I mean. Here's the thing. Multiple things can exist at once.
Yeah.
Gun violence is bad. His children should not have seen that. Genuinely terrifying.
I'm going to be honest.
But also, it's weird to mourn a fascist.
I'm going to be honest. A lot of people know what a CEO is and hate them. I'm not sure too many people have a strong enough image of Charlie Kirk to feel that level of hatred towards him.
Sure, fair enough. It's, yeah.
He's big with political wonks on the left.
Yeah.
And people who like care about leftist politics and stuff, and politics in general. And he's big on the right. But like, unlike with CEOs where like the average American hates him, I don't think the average American up until that point had an opinion about Charlie Kirk.
Maybe. It's I think it's so weird that people are like, but he had a family. And I'm like, that's an entirely different. That has nothing to do with the fact that it's weird to mourn a fascist.
Yeah.
Like, yes, he had a family and I feel terrible for that family. Those parents did not get to pick their father.
How many people did he advocate for death? You know,
I'm not. Yes.
I'm making comfort to the person you're talking to.
Like so many. I know. Yeah. But like so many things can exist at once. Like it is genuinely so sad for his children. And
his last words were his last two sentences.
Counting or not counting gang violence.
Yeah. His last two sentences were, oh yeah, most shooters are trans. And then his last words were gang violence. Like, so he was a rancid. And now it's funny. I like looking at the memorial posts.
Mm-hmm.
Yankee Stadium had a moment of silence for him.
Of course they did. Okay.
But it's funny because you'll see a bunch of crowds of people holding signs that say like, Charlie, you're a hero and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, damn, these all these motherfuckers white.
I'm not even
saying. You could
saying,
kill Trump and you would see people of color in the crowd. Mm-hmm. All these motherfuckers white.
I'm not even saying like everyone should celebrate it. I don't celebrate it any more than I celebrate the fact that a fascist is dead. I'm not celebrating because I don't take glee in his death. That being said, fascist is dead.
I take a grim satisfaction in knowing that I am one step closer to outliving every member of Turning Point USA.
Sure. I forget who said the quote, but it's something to the extent of like...
Sorry to be hip with the kids, Hollow Point USA.
Yeah. I don't wish death upon anyone, but there are obituaries I've read with satisfaction or something like that. It's just so, it's so weird. It's people on the left too.
And I'm not saying that like not everyone has to be like at my level. Like I don't expect people to be at my level I'm like, my only regret is that I did not get the chance to do it myself.
Correct.
Where I'm very much like, I think a lot of people personally need to die. But like, it's a fucking fascist, dude.
It's so weird. It's people on the left.
The political cartoons. Someone fucking made a bunch of crying conservative. No, it was a fucking. They drew the death scene of Mufasa, who they label as Charlie Kirk, and Simba as conservative children.
Yeah.
They also did one where he's entering heaven and he's mic dropping. Mm-hmm. I'm like, what is he mic dropping for?
He won the debate because in order for them to beat him, they had to kill him.
I don't think that's winning the debate.
I don't either. But the reason they're bad at art is because they don't have nuance.
I was staring at it for a long time. I'm like, political assassinations go. It's up there. I guess that's why he's mic dropping. He didn't go out like a chump. I'll give that to Charlie Kirk. He did not go out like a fuck. This was a proper public assassination.
Yeah.
This was, if I had to rate public assassinations based on aesthetic impact, like just the, like, you know, like Kennedy's head getting blown, stuff like that, this is up there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like Grant, who I think I like shot in the chest and died next to air conditioners. You know, this is like a death.
It's just so, it's, and I kind of understand the public figures, kind of. They have a reputation to uphold, kind of. They're cowards, but like, I get what's going on through their head. They're there to protect the money, not to spread a message.
Yeah, I mean, like a comic book writer got fired because they said something not like good.
Saying nothing, if you're like, a leftist public figure, saying nothing is an option. You don't have to be like thoughts and prayers to his family.
I will say, this is one thing where I'm like, Trump's gonna do a hard crackdown. I'm like, this is the one moment I'm sure he's not, because that was possibly the most heartfelt message Trump has ever released. Mm-hmm. His tweet, I was like, this is like the least angry thing he's ever posted in his fucking life.
Yeah.
This is a man who is generally like, bummed.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I don't think anything's going to come of this as like a big political movement.
I don't think.
At least on the right.
Yeah.
I don't think
Charlie Kirk is high enough. First off, he doesn't hold any real office.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he's a high enough figure to really motivate a leftist movement.
As Karen pointed out, I mean, like, he was shot at work. Like, you can't be, it's college campuses. He was just shot at work.
Yeah.
That's what he does. He just goes to college campuses and talks about how we don't need gun safety.
It's not, It's
gonna come out that the guy's like a fucking, because the only people who assassinate people are anymore apparently are just completely insane right wingers. Like, I'm not saying like right wingers are completely insane, like completely literally detached from anything, not even like, oh, I'm believing lies told to me by the politicians I support. Like, literally unhinged people. It's going to be some guy who's like saving Trump somehow or something. It's going to be insane.
And this is, and I've seen a lot of people about like, he didn't, it's free speech and he didn't deserve to die because he had a different opinion or said some messed up shit. This isn't about having a different opinion. Yeah. It's about, he's a fascist.
Yeah,
we don't mourn fascists.
I bring it up all the time. It's the tolerance paradox where, yeah, you have to tolerate free speech, but you can't tolerate fascism. That's not say like going out and saying that like you should oppress people because of their race is not. It's like political free speech. If you're in a free speech area and you're in the free speech zone to speak, and you're talking about like condemning a group of people, if it's anything other than their actions or beliefs, it's you vastly lose the whole like, oh, it's my free speech. Like if you go out there and saying, I think that these people should all be jailed because they're ardent members of the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
Right? Or like, I think these people should be jailed because they're members of the Weather Underground.
Yeah.
But like, when you start it's the racism. It's the fucking fascist racism. You just can't support that.
It's free speech is from the government. It's not
It's also from the government.
It's like, and listen, I disagree. I understand the thought process of being a free speech absolutist from a government perspective. I disagree with it. I can at least understand that mindset. This wasn't free speech. This was a fascist. And like, yes, there are better ways to build a better world. There are. But like, we can talk about them when the fucking Nazis are dead.
Yeah, you can't debate a fascist.
It's
free speech can only exist really when there's a debate to be had, and fascism does not allow room for debate or discussion.
They want neoliberal pacifism to be the answer so fucking badly, and it's not.
We really just,
the answer is violence. Unfortunately, the solution, or at least the quickest, swiftest solution to violence is violence. Yeah,
like because it really does boil down to like them. Because people are like, oh, but like you're saying violence is bad, but you're saying kill these guys. Yeah, but like, I'm not waking up in the morning and they're not saying anything. Like reactionary violence, messy, not the greatest thing, not how it should be going. But like when someone's up there preaching eradication of people, because that's what I always say. Because the only people who I think should die are people who just completely unprompted want the death of others.
Mm-hmm.
For like what? Because they're like a different color or creed.
And I can already, like, I already have heard some of like, well, where do we draw the line? At Nazi.
Yeah, it's,
we draw the line at fucking Nazi.
It's fascism.
It's
when you
so easy. It's such a clear line. It's, well, what about, and I hear it from like wannabe edgelord comedians.
Or my therapist.
Or your therapist. Or weird liberal, neoliberal pacifists.
My Vic's friend Maddie, who's also a therapist, was like, she doesn't sound like a good therapist. So sure. You really shouldn't be arguing like that with your clients over personal beliefs.
But like, it's
it's like, I don't know. Like, I just think when you have an unaccountable police force just rounding people up and throwing them into vans, you know, that's a line I can draw and say, all right, those people, we need to do something with them physically.
And
you can't debate ICE. You can't tell them, well, hey, don't do that, it's wrong.
Correct. And I know in the Black Klansman episode, I did the argument of like, what is a human right and everything. It's, I have those beliefs. Like, I do believe on some level, it is a human right that we should not take away someone else's life. And I also believe that if someone believes you should die and is actively trying to kill you, it is self-defense to kill them.
Now, as someone who exists only in complete absolute confidence of every single one of their beliefs, it's always been very easy for me to deal with these arguments. I mean, to become more arguments because then people yell at me for saying these things. But I know, like, sometimes people struggle to be like, where do I personally draw the line? Mm-hmm. And it really is at, like, only kill the killers.
Yeah, it's fascism.
Yeah, fascism, racism.
I mean,
fascism. Yeah, like if I woke up today and they said, Matthew, you're in charge of all laws, that would be like one of the top laws. Is like, if you're, it'd be worded, and I'd have someone write it for me. Obviously, I'm not a lawyer. And if what I'm about to say was written on like a tablet, it looks stupid as fuck. Mm-hmm. But it's like, if you're gonna go around killing people, you get the death penalty. That's like the only thing I'd have the death penalty for. And I guess rape.
Sure. Yeah.
It's really just rapists and people who advocate like the death of others.
Sure. So the two worst things you can do to another human being.
Yeah. Because like, cause I'm always worried about like, cause I'm like, I'm trying to make sure I'm not like getting myself into like a hypocritical situation. I'm like, no, I'm fine with tons of people on the right. Cause they're not fucking like, I don't think gun girls should die for her gun beliefs and stuff. I don't think the trad people should die for their weird misogyny.
No.
But like, when you're up there saying we should build camps to put people in, yeah, I think maybe you should be shot. They should turn you into a spirit Halloween decoration.
And I don't know how much. Yeah. You can at the exact same time not celebrate someone's death and not mourn them.
Yeah.
Like, you can acknowledge that someone deserved to die and they got what they deserved, and at the exact same time be like, and it's very sad that they had to,
like,
that
a, like,
they
throw
deserve
a
that
party.
No,
because back to the therapist, she just says the time, I'm like, what do you celebrate? Because I was like, no, I definitely think that there's people that should be killed. So, like, well, who should kill him? I'm like, I don't fucking do it. She's like, what do you celebrate that? I'm like, I mean, I feel good about it. I feel like I was doing a morally right thing, but I wouldn't celebrate it. I'd do it and go home. It's war. You have war against fascists. You feel good that you won, but you're not like, woo! You know, you're like, I guess when the war is over, but not like in the day-to-day.
And there are, and I'm not saying that there aren't people who are celebrating, and they're completely valid in doing so. It's weird.
I just don't
to mourn a Nazi.
I just don't think Charlie Kirk's worth my celebration.
Me neither. But he's also not. He doesn't deserve to be mourned over.
He doesn't.
His wife and his children, maybe his his close friends and extended, the people who knew him personally and loved him personally, they should mourn him. It is so weird that these like online leftist content creators are like crying over him.
There's
like
fucking like memorials all over the fucking country, like,
and it's
big gatherings and like not just, and it would really strike me, not just that like you're mourning a fascist, it's Charlie fucking Kirk. He's the guy who said that colleges are discriminating against Republicans because they get lower grades. He's the one you're mourning.
Oh my god. And there are obviously people trying to turn him into a saint, which is weird, but like I get that mindset. I've seen multiple people, mostly from libertarians, multiple people talk about how he was a milquetoast 2012 conservative and that culture itself moved on, and I'm like, no, by fascist standards he was a fascist.
It's just
Mitt Romney is a 2012
conservative. I don't even get the saint thing, because like I can conceptually understand why a Nazi would make a saint out of Hitler. He did what you want to do very well.
Mm-hmm.
He killed a lot of people you don't like,
and yes,
the largest killing of those said people, right? Mm-hmm. Charlie Kirk posted a meme saying, if we're not discriminated against, why do we get lower grades? He didn't do shit. He formed a shitty organization that's best remembered as having a diaper dude for a lot of people and a gun girl. That's Turning Point. Kent's Turning Point is like their most notable thing.
Yeah.
Turning Point doesn't do anything. He just spread like I'm not gonna say he's a milquetoast conservative,
2012,
but he's a milquetoast hate person. He's a milquetoast hate monger. He didn't really breach any new policies.
No.
So, I mean, Steve Miller's out here calling the Democrats a hate group. That's innovative. That's something. What did Charlie Kirk do? Why do you guys care about him so much? He didn't fucking do anything. Ben Shapiro has done more than Charlie Kirk. He formed a stupid organization that had a diaper, dude. Why do you guys care so much? This is where my anger truly is. I don't understand. Why do you guys care so much about him? He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything. You saying people who do something.
Sure.
Joan of Arc did something. What did Charlie Kirk do?
He spoke about what he believed in.
Do so many people. Look, 10 years from now, there's going to be no impact.
I know.
Because of anything Charlie Kirk did. There's tons of conservative figureheads who will have an impact 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Nothing Charlie Kirk built's going to fucking last. Alex Jones. Alex Jones will stand tall looking down on the Ozymandias of fucking Charlie Kirk. He's did something. He created something. He's his own unique thing, which existed. What the fuck? He did fucking Sandy Hook. What did Charlie Kirk do? It's so aggravating. I feel like I'm going insane. He didn't do it. I forget about him. You know, when it was almost his turning point, I don't think
he's
the
just
guy.
An edgelord.
When someone's his turning point, I don't think of the person that made turning point.
Really? Okay.
I think of like the people who like did things, weird as they might be, like the diaper dude, Gun Girl. Gun Girl had way more publicity than Charlie Kirk ever fucking did. He just went around to colleges and a bunch of people who have no fucking friends went and saw him talk for like, I didn't even know he's still doing these things. He doesn't do anything. Oh, it makes me so angry. As someone who's really into politics, I'm like, you have so many freaks you could really get behind and be like, yeah, this guy's my hero. Why is he your hero? What
he's
did
the
he do?
Entry point of the alt-right pipeline. Is that's the I thing. Guess. He's the entry point. He's the, I'm going to debate college student. He's what Ben Shapiro was 10 years ago, before Ben Shapiro, like, became Ben Shapiro.
Ben Shapiro was better at it, I'm going to say.
Yes, agreed. But it's the Ben Shapiro playbook, and he took Ben's spot. He's the entry point where it's like, I'm going to debate these children. I mean, not children. These young adults who don't have media training, and like you come so prepared for this, and they don't. They are making it up as they go along.
He's such a lame little tart.
It's just insane. Anyway, I just I didn't know if you had any more thought. We mentioned in the beginning, and as much as I don't want to be a current events podcast, there's something to be said about this was a huge thing that happened that will not be a huge thing in the future, probably, but it's a huge thing right now. I don't know. I'm gonna close on this. It's the 24th anniversary of the reason my brother has a birthday.
Yeah. I know someone who forgot.
But I, for the last several years, I text my brother, happy reason you have a birthday.
It's a pretty base way to live your life.
So all this to say, this is going to come out after 9/11, obviously, but this was recorded
but
on
9/11. But you know, you can all rest assured at home knowing that I have lit my Osama candle and listened to Bullets.
Happy reason you have a birthday, Ethan.
Happy birthday, Ethan.
So I picked the movie this week.
You brought Birth of a Nation.
I figured in light of recent
yeah,
events.
Well, you sent me a text and you said, I'm going to send you a link to my favorite movie of all time. I really like what it stands for.
No, we brought 2015's Moonwalkers. It's a British...
Ron.
Yeah. So the only comment of Moonwalkers on the YouTube channel...
Is Ron.
It's just a dude
no
Ron.
Punctuation.
I don't know if it's Ron Perlman. I don't know if it's because it has Rupert Grint. It's supposed to be like Ron Weasley. So Moonwalkers is about the faking of the moon landing.
But like an alternate history take on it.
Yes.
By a bunch of hippies. Who do a surprisingly good job. I think it would have been easy to make it make them do a bad job, but the correct comedy choices. In fact, it looks really good.
So I picked this movie for a similar reason that I picked Saturday night, but slightly less so. I think this is a movie that is so close to working that it has all of the parts. They're mostly in the right order. It's just something.
See, I think the movie fucking works.
I get that. I think the first 20 minutes of this works, and I think the last 20 minutes of this works, and I think the 50 minutes in between, or the 55-ish minutes in between, are just so messy. I think it has all of the... I think the machine is there. I just think there isn't gas in the car, if that makes sense. Like, it's so close to working for me. And I want to discuss, like, exactly where it went wrong.
No, and I'd be able to help there, because this is a banger. Toe to tip.
It's such love a banger
Ron
premise.
Perlman, yeah. Love Ron Weasley.
Yes. I love him
I
in
love
this movie.
The complete accuracy of them showing basically a Warhol art film at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, this is just a Warhol. This is just the art factory. Hell yeah. These people know what they're fucking doing making this movie. They're like, this is the type of people they're going to go to for help. And I know exactly what those people do.
Okay. So this
also,
is.
Also.
Yeah.
A lot of hot tits.
Yeah. I did. I forgot about them. This movie is about. Rupert Grint, who plays Johnny, who's a I don't want to say loser, he's a loser, he's a fuck
he's
up
a loser,
but like he's down on his luck all the time. It's
yeah, when you're down on your luck most all the time, you're a loser.
He's the most unlucky person in the world. He's the he's the manager of this band, and he's trying to get this band signed, and they're
they're a bad band.
A 70s style
they're
shitty
a bad
rock band.
70s yeah. band. Like, that's the thing where it's like, I'm not sure it's bad luck. He chose a bad band to back. He lists off all his song titles. I'm like, oh, these are horrid. I can picture you. I know I've seen this kind of band before live, where they're like oh, we can play instruments and that makes us a band, and it doesn't. You need to be able to like make things good, and they don't.
So he's trying to back this band, and at the exact same, he also owes money to like
the Ironmonger,
the mob. And at the same time, Ron Perlman is a Vietnam vet who works for the CIA, who is placed in charge of a mission to convince Stanley Kubrick to direct the faking of the moon landing.
In case it doesn't work.
In case it doesn't work. And
the movie's not saying the moon landing didn't happen. The Americans just wanted to be prepared in case the rocket couldn't land.
Actually, this movie doesn't know whether the moon landing happened.
But they're saying it's possible.
So
also, Ron Perlman brings a lot of horror to this movie. He's having these
PTSD.
Yeah, and they went like, they're like, you know what? A lot of this movie, goofy fun. We're going to just do straight up horror for that.
Yes. All of that stuff works. I don't love that it kind of implies doing acid one time cured him of PTSD.
No, that's true.
Okay. I don't.
Have you ever thought that the reason, look, all these veterans today, right? All have PTSD that is untreated. And that's because none of them do drugs or feel free love.
It still requires multiple use anyway.
All it requires is that you, look, if you have PTSD, do some acid, make friends with a weaselly British man, and see a woman topless, cured.
That is a weird thing to imply, and it's not true.
I signed us up for an acid supplement, so I'm starting to lay the groundwork.
Okay, I mean, sure, I'll try. I'll drop acid with you. So Ron Perlman goes to England to try and meet Stanley Kubrick. Johnny is cousins with a big time manager who's the manager of Stanley Kubrick. Through happenstance, we'll get more into specifics, but through happenstance, through some wacky hijinks that actually work. Again, the first 20-25 minutes of this movie really work for me, but he gets mistaken for Stanley Kubrick's manager, Johnny's roommate, who's Robert Shahan, who's Klaus in Umbrella Academy, plays Leon, who's just like an absolute junkie, not like heroin junkie, like a self-destructive psychedelics, like I constantly can't feel, I'm not allowed to feel
my emotions.
And
not even like a gross self-destructiveness. He just kind of doesn't do anything with his life.
No, but he knowingly makes the wrong decision, knowing it's going to dramatically fuck up everything.
At the time, he thought it was the right decision.
Sure.
Talking about the mushrooms. It's only after he takes the mushrooms does he realize maybe I shouldn't have taken the mushrooms.
But huffing the glue he understood was a bad thing to do in that moment.
I don't think the character knows much of what's going on throughout the movie. He's just kind of reacting to things.
Fair. So
he's like super nervous about being Stanley Kubrick, and then as soon as he's Stanley Kubrick, he goes, I'm a method actor now. The man does not think more than a second ahead.
So Johnny tricks Ron Perlman. What's his character's name? Anyway, it's Ron Perlman. It doesn't matter. It's Ron Perlman.
It's the whole movie. I was like, fuck, I love Ron Perlman.
That is, Kinsman? Nope. Kidman.
Yeah.
Kidman. He tricks Kidman into thinking that Leon is Stanley Kubrick, and then the mob takes the money and now...
Takes all of it, because you use some of it to pay them back, yes. But then they take all of the money.
And then they now have to... Then they have to convince this, like... pseudo Eastern European Andy Warhol type guy to direct
in our commune.
Yeah. To direct.
And he does an amazingly good job.
Yeah. Because Ron Perlman is the one actually running the behind the scenes of everything.
He's still a good director surrounds himself with good people. Right. And he is surrounded by these fucking half naked, high as fuck hippies build an incredible fucking set.
Yes, they do. And I'm not. Yes. Ron Perlman was the one running the ship. Anyway, and that in the basic plot is then they have to direct the moon landing. I've said this like two or three times. I think the first 25 minutes of this movie fucking works. I think the moment it loses me, the moment it loses me is the moment the art commune is introduced. Because I think that's the moment it becomes... I think that's the moment it becomes silly, or it's not even that it becomes that there's the tonal shift, and I don't think it nails the tonal shift, and then because of that, I think
it's a silly movie throughout. So I guess I just didn't have that experience.
Okay, I think it's
we have the whole scene where the general's like, "I know you don't want to go to London because it is full of homosexuals.
Yes.
They're just straight men who are like that."
But when your opening scene is a Vietnam War flashback, I think like it's. I think it's tonally, I think the movie can't decide whether it wants to be taken seriously or not. Or at least, like, at its worst, it can't decide. Also, at its worst, this movie is still fun. Like, this is a movie that, like, I only don't think it works because I'm analyzing the movie. If I turn my brain off and I just enjoy the ride, which I have done before, it's a blast.
See, I didn't get the tonal whiplash from the Vietnam flashbacks. I'm viewing that as like a good use of juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. It almost becomes comedy in itself, is that there's this insane gathering around a man who's dealing with a very serious real problem, who's seeing actual horror movie monsters. Well, like a man's like, it took me 3 years to jump on a trampoline.
Yeah, and I don't think that works. Like,
it's absurd. It's an absurdist kind of take.
Sure, 100%. Having the absurdist world in this like very like having like this very like grounded. Having a horror movie take place in an absurdist comedy,
I think it's the most absurdist thing you can do. I think that a lot of times where people fail in absurdity is committing all the way, and I feel to have a true good absurdist, I think absurdism works really well when you have like one really grounded thing, because then it highlights everything else.
But I think it would be better if he was a straight man, not in an entirely different movie. Like, I think the parts where it's Rupert Grint as Johnny just like grasping at straws, trying to keep the whole ship from falling, I think that part, those parts like can work. And I think that's when like the absurdist stuff is at its best, when Johnny is the straight man, when he's the one being taken for the ride, as opposed to it's this guy experiencing like internal terror. Wow, like
I think he kind of effectively narratively is from a different movie, because he's this CIA operative trying to do like this big secretive thing, And I think a lot of the comedy lies from the fact that this person from a different movie about faking the moon landing. Because, like, when you think about a movie about faking the moon landing, he's from the movie most people would think of. Like, this more serious, like, kind of, not like thriller, but more political-minded movie. Mm-hmm. And then he walks into the British arts scene.
But I also then think, don't have the gangster movie play in the background, which kind of defeats the last 20 minutes, which I think, like, really work. When it's the CIA versus the mob, I think, like, that's when the and maybe it's because we have the 55 minutes of absurdity that are just messy, that, like, it makes the tight absurdity make better. But, like, I think this movie is trying to be, like, four different movies, and I don't I think it needed to pick two. Personally, I think it needed to be a horror absurdist comedy. I think it needed to stick with that. I don't think it needed to be like a gangster movie, and I don't think it needed to be like the military political movie. You can have the military stuff in the background less, which is military is not really in this movie until the end, but like you can have like the military stuff run in the background way less.
I think you just don't like a lot of subplots happening in your movies.
I don't like a lot of subplots that are like tonally completely different movies, and I like when
I'm just not seeing the tonally.
One's a straight British gangster movie. One's like pseudo absurdist like art house comedy. One's like a military thriller is the wrong word, but like a military comedy, and then one's a straight up horror movie. And I think if it had, I'm fine with multiple subplots is that if they all make sense in the same movie. And I don't think that even if the ending works for me, I don't think the middle where
the gangster is the motivation for his character. And they don't touch it on it too much, but the gangster stuff's the motivation for his character. And then it is because the core kind of central point of the movie that's holding everything together is that this is an incredibly awful clusterfuck that was made by a mistake. Like, that's where the movie's comedy lies, that they're faking the moon landing, but it's a clusterfuck. That's mm-hmm. That'd be the elevator pitch. Someone faked the moon landing, but it's an absolute clusterfuck.
Sure, yes.
And having, like, all these elements come together to make that clusterfuck, it's not just like, oh, they're dealing with wacky art people. It's like, this man just walked into a fucking shit show and everything's fucking going off the rails and everyone's pulling in their own personal problems. Everything's conceding. No one's really aware of what's happening. Like, the art commune doesn't know what's happening with the band, which doesn't happen to know what's happening with the gangsters, which doesn't know what happens with the government. And it's all just, no one's on the fucking same page. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if you were to take away some of that, you would lose a feeling of the absolute just insanity of the situation, where it is just the one of the worst possible situations through no one's fault, really.
I just think there's a way. I think there's a way to make it all feel like the same movie, and I know it's just tone. The reason this movie doesn't work for me, it's tone, because each individual movie works, and I think putting them together. This movie needed to either be 10 minutes shorter or 20 minutes longer. You needed to, like, let stuff breathe, or you needed it to be so tight that you don't have time to think about anything. And at 95 minutes, I think this movie's, like, just in a weird spot where it, like, it doesn't give the military or the gangster movie enough room to breathe, but it also gives them too much impact on the plot that we're cutting away from, like, the actual what the movie should be too often. Am I making sense here? Like, I know you can disagree, but like,
I can see your argument. I don't think I've ever had an issue where you've had like issues with tone, and you've had a lot of issues with tone.
Yeah, because I want things to feel like they're in the same movie.
But like, I think there's been times where I can see it a bit, but a lot of times it feels like a British comedy about a clusterfuck made happening around someone trying to fake the moon landing. Every part of that feels to me to be part of that general thesis. None of those things feel like they're falling outside the scope of the movie, which is where I would have tonal problems. If something's like, it doesn't feel like it's underneath the circus tent. The circus tent is it's a bunch of British people and one American in a clusterfuck trying to make the moon landing, and everything for me fits underneath that tent.
Sure. I don't think you need the gangster movie at all. I think it's completely like you wouldn't even really have to find another ending because the CIA would still try and kill them. Like, you cut the gangster movie out of this movie, out of Moonwalkers, and I probably would like it more. I can deal with the military stuff if it's the only thing that doesn't feel like it's a part of this world. And like, I understand that they're like a country away, and it's the different cultures and blah blah blah. Like, yeah, cut the gangster movie. That's all. If I could make one quick editing fix, that would be my one editing fix. My actual fix would be I would rewrite the entire middle of this movie. But like, if I could just make one instant decision, that would be it. I don't know. I guess
to me, just another aspect of this clusterfuck, that the smaller clusterfuck that Johnny's in, that spirals into a larger clusterfuck once the Americans get involved.
Do you know what movie I wish this was more like? Not in actual plot, but in like tone, is Keanu. Like the Key and Peele movie. But that's a movie that like, it turns into like this, from the start to the end, we're in too deep. Like, you track everything, and the crime movie feels like it exists. I mean, because it takes place in the crime world. If this was Keanu, but instead of you cut the crime world out, and it's just like, we fucked up, now we have to mess with these weird artist communes. I also hate drug scenes. Like, I think they're stupid like almost 100% of the time. So the acid scene does nothing for me. I think it's pretty, but like, it does nothing for me. But like, if that's my biggest complaint about this movie, like, I'm fine with that. I think the movie should be tighter. I think the movie should be tighter.
I just think that would be like a totally tonally different ending from what they were going for. If they somehow triumph over the CIA instead of just cleaning up what's left and leaving.
But it also would be the ending that they set up. They set up that the CIA was trying to kill them.
They do. Yeah, but then like, they walk away. Everything that went wrong, they do a little cleanup and walk away from, because all the problems just kind of take care of them fucking selves. Because there's tons of CIA guys. They all die. All these gangsters are after them. They all die. And they're left with like one dude who they just fucking murk and leave. They triumph very much through just sheer clusterfuckery than any ability of their own. Because if it's just them versus the CIA, that requires a lot more effort and action on their part.
You get, you get to show off Ron Perlman being Ron Perlman. Maybe you have Johnny occasionally do something by accident.
But I feel like the movie kind of ends in the whole like FUBAR situation where like it's such a clusterfuck that you just kind of walk away and you don't know what fucking happened. You're just gone. You're like, well, that fucking resolved itself, I guess. There's no big confrontation in this movie at the end. There's no final conflict. Everything just reaches a level of being so fucked that it just kind of eats itself, and then the main characters manage to walk away from it.
And that feels like a cop-out to me. Like, that feels
I feel like it fits the narrative themes of it.
I think if you have, like, this entire situation was completely out of their control. I mean, they fucked up and they lost control, and then that's the moment they gained the control back. I think that's more narratively satisfying than everything resolved itself and we can walk away scot-free.
I think going true to what they were trying to do with the movie, I think it's if they never gain, they don't gain control. It has just completely spiraled out of their hands, and they managed to survive. That was an intentional vibe they were going for. That was an intentional direction they were taking with the ending.
And I don't like that direction. I think it feels like a cop out to me.
And then like, I don't know. Like, I just think you want like an entirely different movie at that point.
I want the characters to have more agency at the end. Yeah. Like, instead of letting them gain agency in a deleted scene that after everything falls apart, like, I don't think it's an entirely, I don't think it's an entirely different movie if I want, like, I do want a different, nah, you know what? Screw all that. I do want a different movie. I think this is an excellent premise, and it's kind of squandered in, like, a mess. And I wish it was tighter. I want a tighter movie. You have all of the ingredients, or most of the take some of the ingredients away and make like a tighter soup. Like, instead, a food metaphor.
You know me. I like a messy goulash.
Yeah, nah. I like something.
You autists with your clean endings.
Okay, please. Okay.
I just don't. Maybe the movie wasn't meant for you. Maybe it was meant for a different audience. You know, that's also things.
Also possible. Yeah. Yeah. What audience? I mean, what audiences was this meant for, other than like
me, apparently,
little weirdo history people? Like,
I think I'm gonna be completely honest with you. I think the intended audience was little weirdo history people. I think that's who the director's like, I'm making this movie for little weirdo history people who are gonna see the movie Bounce and go, ah, that's an Andy Warhol thing. I think the movie's made for little artsy people. What was the release on this?
Mostly in Britain, did the festival circuit.
Yeah, this is 100% a movie made for the festival circuit, and it succeeds at that task. This is a little weirdo festival movie. This is someone who's like, I want to go see a little weird festival movie, and you watch this, you go, that was a good weird festival movie.
But I think it's too big to be a weird festival movie then.
Nah.
I think at its size, it should have, and I'm not saying it wasn't released in theaters, but I'm saying they should have focused on a theater audience. Or if you're gonna make a weirdo festival movie, do it for like three quarters of this budget.
Man wanted to make a weirdo festival movie with a big budget. You know, I think that's fine. That's cool.
But I don't think that's what,
because it's the, you know, he definitely knew going in that's who he's making it for. He's like, I have a bigger budget. That's what I'm still gonna do that way.
But I think then the movie, I mean, and it's not the budget in and of itself, is that it feels big, like. I think if you're going to go festival, you want this to feel very small and personal is the wrong word.
He's making it for the festival audience, who is still going to like bigger movies. So it's meant for that audience. It's just on a bigger scale than most festival movies. I don't necessarily think that the scale of the production or the budget, and you're not saying it's the budget, but like the scale or the budget should determine the audience. You know, you can make a small low budget movie for people, for like a big audience. You can make it Blair Witch. You can make a bigger scale thing for a smaller audience. This movie.
See, I think it's easier is the wrong word. Better is the wrong word. It makes more sense to do these small for a wide audience than if this was a Blumhouse movie, like in like Blumhouse scale, like a Happy Death Day style scale. It would make a lot more. Happy Death Day 2 is three movies in one, and it works very well for me. And so I think like if this movie had that, I mean, we'll say vibe, if it had that. And I know you haven't seen Happy Death Day 2, but like,
I haven't seen one.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to bring them
up. Does
on
it happen again?
Sort of.
Is it the same person?
Yeah. Yes and no.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So, Happy Death Day 1 is like a slasher-esque movie. And then Happy Death Day 2 is like a sci-fi heist movie. But like, I feel like that's the scale it should have. I don't know. I hate using the word better. It makes more sense to go, like, if you are going for festival, to make it feel more singular, as opposed to, I feel like this movie, that if this movie knows its audience, I think it's trying to do a best of both worlds thing, a little bit splitting the difference, and I don't think that works. I think if it had picked one of them, it would have, better is the wrong word, but it would have made more sense.
I don't know, I don't think it's as big. I don't think the scale's that big that it's reaching outside of its bounds. And I always respect someone not necessarily making the choice that makes the most sense, but the one that they are like, this is what I'm going to do. This is my gut. This is what my gut's telling me. This movie, like, physically doesn't even occupy a lot. I'm not sure where this big scale, what the big scale you're referring to is. Because it's not, like, locations. It's not, like, scope of what's happening in the movie. I mean, most of the movies spent on the same set in a small area. They're not really going too far beyond that. And even when we do go to other spaces, we don't spend, like, a lot of time there. It's not like Lord of the Rings, or, like, you're spending time in Gond. You're spending time in Gond, or you're spending time in Ronin, you're spending time in Mordor. It's like you're mostly in the art commune and then just kind of checking in on the other pieces on the board in their other locations. Like, we're not spending tons of time in America.
I think I mean scale of, like, it is trying to have both a broad appeal and, like, a niche festival appeal. And I don't think it,
what's,
like...
What's the broad appeal part you're seeing?
It's trying to... I think it's because... Okay, it's a movie we watched earlier, Swiss Army Man, has big actors but feels like an indie movie.
We watched earlier. It was the first one we did, I think, no, or the second. It was the, okay, it's the second one we did.
Swiss Army Man has big actors but feels like an indie art house movie. This has big actors and doesn't feel like, it doesn't feel like, it feels like both they took it for the paycheck and they like...
Why doesn't it feel like it's an art movie? I don't see anything in this movie I would not attribute to this. It's an artsy art house movie. It just happens to have a bit more money, but it's still going into the sausage grinder, you know. Put a lot more meat into that sausage grinder of art house, so you're getting a bigger sausage, but it's the same process. You're not adding in stuff or going to a different machine to get the other feeling of like a not art house film. It's like how like The Green Knight feels very much like, perhaps on the other end of this, where it is someone who likes art house films making a bigger movie.
This feels like
what someone in an artsy film school would make if they were given enough money.
It's in the least dumb way possible. I think this movie feels too clean and looks too clean and looks too like, it looks too put together to like fully feel like an indie art housey festival type movie. And I think that's just the nature of it having a bigger budget. And I don't actually know what the budget of this movie was, but maybe it didn't have a big budget. It was just money well spent. But this movie visually looks too smooth and clean to me that I feel like it's trying to like... This movie feels like it should have been directed by a music video director, not a commercial director. Like, this movie feels like it's constant, like, in a way that a commercial is constantly trying to sell. This movie feels like it's trying to sell me. And I wish that, like, that it felt like it was more, like, vibey. Because tonally, it is very vibey. But I think, like, aesthetically, it should match. It should match more. Do you
think they should make a worse visual product?
Not even worse visual, just, like... have a style, like, because visually, aesthetically, whatever we want to say, feels very like factory put together, and this movie is not factory, like, plot and vibe wise is not factory put together. So I think it should have like an aesthetic that matches it more tonally. Like, that's not, everything has to be inspired camera work, but if you're going to like,
it's a very functional utilitarian camera work,
and that works for like a very functional utilitarian story. But if you're trying to tell this like weirdo conspiracy vibey thing, then like have camera work and visuals like if they were going as
we're not going to do utilitarian, we're gonna do something funky with it.
Yes.
I would feel like they are trying too hard.
I would disagree.
Because I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you're just, because you're leading everything in one direction, just because now you're like really focused on this one aspect where it's not, like, the camera work, he isn't concerned about the camera work because that's not as much as a concern for him in the priorities of what he's making the film.
But it's a visual medium.
And he made a decent product. I don't think he cared about going over the top with it. I think in movies you can have functional utilitarian camera work, and that's okay. I don't think you need to put a heavy focus on it, no matter the genre.
I feel like everyone, it should feel like it has a, it should feel like a single decision visually was made. Like, instead of like, this movie feels like this.
It feels like I'm watching something happen.
Yeah, and that's no. I want to be in it. I want to be in the movie.
I'm standing on the side watching a clusterfuck happen.
Yeah, and I want to be in the clusterfuck. I think that's the better choice for the movie. I think as an audience member, you should feel like you're experiencing the movie, and I feel like having no stylistic decision be made hurts it. Like, I think, sure. I don't even get that I'm just standing to the side. It just feels like, I feel it the most in the action sequences where it's the action, especially the one in the one with the bikers in the bathroom. I know they're not bikers, but you know the one I'm talking. Yeah. That's my main point amplified, where like I feel like that scene is so just like shot.
And yeah, it's a CIA guy cleaning up house.
It's not well choreographed enough action to justify like cleanness, but so move with it. Like, it's just, this movie is visually boring.
Whenever
in a premise he fights, that is not boring.
Whenever he fights, it's very dry, utilitarian fighting.
Sure, but there's a way to make that visually interesting. Like, that's not.
This isn't a visual medium. I'm just not sure I want. I like that. The very clean utilitarian. Whenever the clean utilitarian CIA guy fights, it's a clean utilitarian view. It's matching him in those fight scenes. I think if they went,
but I don't think it is. Like,
if they did more things with the camera, it would separate itself from the very matter of fact of his violence.
Agree to disagree.
His violence isn't flashy or interesting or wacky. It's just a part of the job.
But then neither is any of the other movie. But it is. Like, this movie is interesting. The premise of this movie, hell, the things that happen in this movie are interesting. And, like, I don't want it to look like...
I feel like it's also a very British way of shooting things.
Sure, but then you have, like, you have Edgar Wright, and you have Hitchcock, and you have, hell, Kubrick was American, but, like, most of his career was in England. Like, if this movie was shot like a Stanley Kubrick movie to, like, mirror, like, this, like, that they were trying, that, like, the moon landing was trying to also feel like a Stanley, or, hell, if this was shot like a fucking Andy Warhol movie, that, like, if it had made a single... If it had picked a single style, I even if it's the wrong style, I would like it more.
I think decisions were made. You just don't like them or think that they're valid decisions.
I don't think they're valid because it doesn't look like a decision was made. It looks like the active decision was made to look like a decision wasn't made. And I think that's wrong. I think make it look pretty, make it look ugly, make it like... have a sense of anything, make it look like anything.
I fully believe that the director chose where the camera was in all these shots and had thoughts on it, and this is where it ended up. Like, okay. Choices were made. I don't think it was a choice not to have a choice. I just think that these were the choices he made, and it's a very traditional British style of film.
Sure. I kind of disagree.
They have a starchiness, like, compared to
they
us.
Do. I've seen a lot of British cinema too, but like...
And sure, it could have been made better with like a more prolific cinematographer who knows how to do more interesting things in that space, even being British themselves. But I'm just not sure that's a decision that was ever going to be made. This is how the movie was made, and it was made adequately enough. I'm not going to be like, you should have made more decisions with it.
I feel like this is such a lightning in a bottle fire fucking premise that I feel like to waste it visually to where it feels put by paint by numbers, like... I'm not saying that, like, it feels like he just plopped a camera. Like, to feel so visually boring for such a great premise feels like you're squandering the premise. And if we want to, sure. I just think decisions were made. I think they were the wrong decisions.
I mean, to be fair, I have gone on the record as saying sound is important, camera isn't important to a movie. So.
And they both are.
I think you can make a decent film without focusing on either.
Okay. I mean, that's not an argument even worth having.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry, I just... Folks,
my opinions aren't worth shit.
Oh, my God. It's just not an argument worth getting into right now. Sorry I said the wrong whatever. Final thoughts?
I really like this movie. You should check it out. And, you know, Ron Perlman rocks. And, good tits. Wouldn't stay at this home, though.
Ron Perlman rocks. Rupert Grant rocks. Robert Sheehan rocks. all of the acting in this movie is very good.
I would now want to spend time with this artist. I don't like artist comedies.
No, I would. Renatus is, but I think that's a great performance. Anyway, I just feel like this movie squanders a brilliant premise. And I think it's so close to working that it's a real shame when it doesn't. When this movie works, it runs, baby. When this movie moves, it runs, and when it doesn't, it feels like it's crawling. Do you want to do socials?
Yeah, I can do socials. If you want to find me personally, maybe see some pictures of Boston. Not all of them, though, because I don't quite understand sharing on Instagram. I can constantly fuck it up. But you can see a few things. No Crab March, though. Sorry, mother. You can go to, almost said the show's Instagram. That's incorrect. Midwest_magician. If you want to see our show-related images, which are mostly announcements, but you know, maybe I'll throw something up fun just for you. You can find that Two Men Movie Podcast. Or Two Men and a Movie Podcast, right?
Two Men Movie Podcast.
Two Men Movie Podcast. Two Men and a Movie's the YouTube.
Yes. And it's the only one that's like that.
Yeah.
And Spotify, but yeah.
If you hate long episodes, that's where you'll go. We can't post too long of an episode. Pretty long episodes, but there's like a strict 3-hour limit, I've learned. If you want to email us pictures of your mom, twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Who's the
there's reader? There's no one really in this movie.
No, you don't want Ella or any of the...
Oh gosh, it'd be insufferable. She'd drive me insane.
Nah, she rules. A weirdo hippie artist lady.
Wow. She would drive me fucking insane.
Nah, I would love it.
But yeah, so in lieu of any new, you know, you guys all know the old, you guys keep track of all the old fan fictions I'm requesting. So this week, I'm just requesting picture of your mom. You know, and maybe Levis says, this is my mom, I love her. So I know that there's happy relationships out there that just fill me with some joy in these dark times. Also, we do have a store where you can see, you buy a shirt with the illustrious, the famous Marvin the Movie Walrus. And you can find that in the show description and eventually Instagram when I figure out how Linktree works.
You can find me at harrisonpool.com on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and Lemonade. That's HARRISONPOOLEDOTCOM, harrisonpool.com. Or you can find me on Letterboxd at HDPOOLE124, where I rated this movie 2 stars. Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme music. Make sure you check out his bands, Tonight with Vince and Natural Health. Thank you guys for listening. Tune in next week for whatever movie we end up watching next week.
Yeah, I gotta find a movie that you like. I feel like I've been defending a lot of movies recently.
Well, that was the point of this month. That was the original
point of this month.
The original point of this month was like, was supposed to be Shittember, but then I picked movies that like are that I don't like,
yeah,
that like have parts that
I thought you'd just by happenstance just started to bring movies you didn't like.
No, there was a theme.
Why am I suddenly defending all these movies?
I love how I literally can like tell you things and you just anyway.
As I told our good friend Philip when I misspelled his name on the Instagram, do I look like a man who retains information?
Anyway, thank you guys for listening. I'm pretty sure I did everything else. So long and good night.
Hugs and kisses.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.